Can they hear you?
Yes, you can.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So, Ray, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, I am recording this meeting. This is the Netherlands Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting on February 3rd, 2021. Start with roll call. Ian O'Brien, I am present.
The microphone, it's picking it up there. So just, we're good.
They can hear
Todd Weisler.
Present.
Ray Willis.
Present.
Henry Zerberg.
Yep.
And Chief Durr.
Yes.
So we have board quorum. And I call this meeting to order at 19:06. First thing on the agenda is to approve the meeting agenda. I have not made any changes to the one that I posted to you all on Saturday or Sunday. I forget which.
Cool. Motion to move agenda as presented.
Okay. I'll second that.
Second.
You too.
Okay, you second it.
I will. Todd, I assume you approve the agenda.
I approve, yes. Look it over.
And Ray, did you approve the agenda?
Yes.
Thank you. So I just going back to roll call quickly. For those who didn't get that earlier, Patrick is not with us this evening. He's in Boise doing some business for Castle Rock. I also sent you the minutes for the January the 6th meeting over the weekend. I'll make the motion to approve the minutes for that meeting. Were there any corrections that anybody saw that needed to be made? Or do I get a second?
Yes.
Okay. Henry, you okay with those minutes?
Yes.
And Todd, were you happy with the minutes as presented?
Yeah, they're good.
Okay, thank you. We'll get those posted. We do have some members of the public on this evening. If anybody would like to make any public comments or statements, please do so now and let me know that you wish to do so. Okay, I'll take that as a no. There's the opportunity at the end to also make comments on anything we discuss this evening. So over to you, Todd, for the Treasurer's Report. I'll just pull over your sheet.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so as we had discussed in our last meeting, we wanted to plus up the grant match reserve to 28.8 from the 25K that was in there. And that's to cover the life packs that we're purchasing this year. Other than that, you know, our total funds are $306,591. What we have reserved now with that a little bit of addition to the grant match reserve is $240,994. We still have accounts receivable, outstanding small amount for inspection, but also a fairly large amount for wildland deployments. And then expenses not paid, $18,880. And then total unreserved funds are $101,379. And then as far as income, of course, this doesn't show what we just got reported on for this month, but that'll come out, that'll show in our next financials. But for this month, we're reporting no income except for the fire inspection billing of $433. We expect our large influx of income around March or so, but today we have a total of $237,000 available for continued operations because we have $106,902 reserved for continued operations. So we have $101,379 of unreserved funds, and then there's a $54,000 that is still accounts receivable. So I think we're in good shape to make it to March. Any questions? Okay, let's go to expenses then.
Hey, Todd, I'm going to have some questions at the end of your report, but it can wait.
Okay, sounds good. So our expenses for the month, $56,695. And we're underspent for the month. If we take our total expenditures for the year and just spread it out over each month evenly, we would say we're about $24,000 underspent for the month of January. I think we're probably going to see a similar type of spending in February, unless there's something, maybe the life packs that it's, I don't know when we plan to get billed or when we're going to plan to pay for the life packs. Wasn't that around February or so?
Todd, deliverable was supposed to be March 15, then with a net 30 bill on top of that. So mid to late April.
Okay. So probably February is going to be a similar amount of expenditures. Mm-hmm. And then let's go to three if there's no questions on expenses. No questions. Okay. So for summary, I just said that, for as far as our general fund to support operations, we have $237,000. And that includes that accounts receivable. Expect a monthly burn through March of around $60,000. And we set that reserve to cover the life packs. Okay, go ahead, Henry. What's your questions?
So I got a couple of questions on our check register and how that transfers into the income and expense statements. For example, we spent $1,450 with CPS Consulting. That is a check written in the middle of January, but there is no offsetting entry in our income and expense statement. The same goes for Lyons Gaddis. We spent some legal fees and those numbers are not transferred into our January income and expense ledger. And then I had a question, maybe that's for the chief. There was an expense of $3,646 to AOV Incorporated, and I do not know what that is or who that is. And also I did not see an offsetting entry in our income and expense statement for that expense as well.
Henry, it might be the same answer for all questions. So the $3,646 was for t-shirts, sweatshirts, long sleeve shirts. And that order was placed at the end of 2020. And so although you're seeing it in the 21 check register, the expense was booked into 2020. And I would suspect that's probably true for Lyons Gaddis as well as CPS.
Okay. Todd, is that something that you could confirm at some point to make sure that was?
Yeah. No, I will. I'll follow up on that. I have a note to follow up on that, and I'll report on that next meeting, if that's okay.
Yep, of course. And then I kind of had a general question on. I saw an email. I think Ian, maybe you sent that out after you got some revised statements from Kathy that the expenses and receivables for all our 2020 wildland fire efforts are being booked in 2020. But it's so. I just saw that we still have an outstanding receivables of about $54,000. So is that going to get booked also back into 2020? I know from an accounting point of view, I think that's an acceptable way to do it. I'm not 100% sure if this is very transparent and trackable, but it's just something I think we need to be very, very diligent about it to make sure we're, like these numbers where we're receiving them, the date and where we're booking them, to make sure that these numbers actually add up at the end of the day. Part of that is maybe a question I have, or just an observation, maybe not a question, that I was looking at one individual firefighter that we had sent out on these deployments. And in December, we wrote that individual checks in the amount of about $31,000. And then kind of surprising to me, again, in January, we wrote that individual another checks in the amount of about $23,000. So we wrote one individual checks in the amount of just about $55,000 for wildfire deployment. And I just want to make sure that, that is okay and those numbers are real.
Go ahead, Tom. We do have a compilation from Kathy where we're tracking, the payouts to the firefighters for their deployments. And we could have that sent around to the entire board if that is acceptable to you, Ian.
Yeah, that's fine. I thought it went to everybody anyway. Did it just get to you?
Oh, did it?
I thought it did. Maybe it did not. So just going back to Henry's point, so the income would be booked when it arrives, the income is booked when we create the invoice, I believe. So
yeah.
When the 2020 books, but the money will arrive in 2021. So it won't affect our income and expense sheet for 2021.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it will then balance out and the numbers would add up in 2020.
Right. Because the expenditures we had on that individual firefighter in January, the checks we wrote out, the $23,000, they obviously did not get booked in January. They must have gotten booked in retrospect in 2020. So the 2020 statements have all changed.
That would sound right to me. I haven't seen the year ends from Kathy. I'm not sure she's closed the year out yet, but we can ask for an updated version of the December INE they would be booked in. So Todd, can I leave that with you to chase that up?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'll follow up on that too.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure that all these checks were written in December. Although I see what you're seeing now, Henry. Okay, we'll follow that up with Kathy and work out where those numbers are being booked so that we know. But yeah, I take your point, Henry. I see what you're getting at.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. I got
and Henry, just real quick, Henry, the numbers you're seeing are in the December or the February check register are we talking about here?
There is the...
You were talking...
December and January. So there was an expense of about almost $32,000 in December check register, and then another $23,000 in the January check register, totaling about
$55,000. Okay. Yeah, let me look at that and I'll follow up.
Yeah, and part of that would make sense because we obviously received a payment for some of our wildland billing because I think we were running $100,000 that we billed, if I remember correctly, and we're now down to 54. So that's all starting to work through the system. So we'd be paying out the last percentages of bills, last percentage of wildland billing that we'd got done the 85% on. And then there was probably maybe some more that went through December time or November.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll follow up.
Okay. Yeah, we may need a better way for the board to track this, actually, so that we properly, so we have good visibility and transparency on what the wildland billing's looking like. And obviously that goes back to it's last year was an odd year, so we've never had to do this before.
Yeah, and that wildland ledger is really detailed. So, you know, I think that should really be a document that will answer all these questions.
Cool.
Okay.
Awesome. We'll follow up, Henry. No, yeah, I have no further question then.
Okay.
Thanks, Henry.
Go ahead, Ray.
It does seem to me, though, that with the checks that were signed in January, the 54,000 that we're waiting on, probably that number increases by another billings, or I'm not sure of the right term, but.
How do you mean the 54,000 that when it was that Henry's talking about?
Yeah, I'm just because we have 54,000 outstanding that we're waiting on, correct?
Correct.
So with the 50,000 roughly that was in checks in January, is there another statement that we're waiting on? So that number, that 54,000 increases?
Ray, if you're asking, have we completed all of our fire billing? I believe that is accurate, and I believe the 54K is what's total due to us. I think the cautionary tale I have, Todd, or the discussion, is that we know our normal monthly float, but the wildland fire pay stuff that we processed in January, we're also going to float. So that might be further discussion again, just on how much we're banking for reserve or what that percentage is we're reimbursing or paying out to the firefighters before we get reimbursed.
Well, we got to remember this was an extraordinary year. We've never had this type of discussion before.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it was an extraordinary year. And we did kind of discuss that back in December about changing our policy on how we reimburse wildland fire, but I don't think we came to any specific conclusions on that.
Right.
But I mean, this is a kind of an example of, you know, we're floating a fairly large sum of money. And I think in the transparency aspect, it'd be good to see where we stand in terms of what we've floated and what's been reimbursed and what's still outstanding, which I don't think we really see here.
Right, this is the problem. Yeah, if we allocate these costs back to, you know, into 2020 from 21, then, you know, we don't really have any, there's no transparency other than just having to go back into 2020 and look at those statements again. But I mean, I understand that, but I just want to make sure that, you know, Todd, our treasurer, is aware of that and, you know, is able to review these numbers and make sure in his opinion that, you know, this is all clean.
Okay. Yeah, and when you say, Henry, in the check register, you're seeing a 22K amount. That's you're adding up payments to a particular person to get to that 22?
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. I'm just picking one firefighter out who received, you know, a good amount of funds and I'm sure well deserved. But I just want to make sure that it's a substantial sum that person received over the span of, well, the span of his deployments last year over the span of 2 months in our business, December and January.
And
a lot of money that we paid out. I just want to make sure that corresponds somewhere back to, you know, the receivables or what we already have received from the government.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I just found the email. Sorry, it didn't go to all of us. I will forward that to the rest of the board, the wildland ledger.
And concerning that ledger, I'll follow up with Kathy to make sure that you know, it's been updated. So yeah, go ahead and send it out, but I'll follow up and let you know if it's been updated properly.
Okay.
Thank you.
We all good on the treasurer's report? Any further questions? Okay, just going to jump back on the balance sheet. I noticed the negative balance on the checking account that just caught my eye today. I hadn't noticed it before. I think that's just a QuickBooks reporting issue. I don't believe that's a true value. Okay. Did you see that too and check that with Kat?
Yeah, and there's a check for $37,000. She said at the time she sent those financials out, she said there's a check for $37,000 that is sitting waiting to go to pay for the tender. Right. And there was a funds transfer of $40,000 that was going to cover that. So,
okay.
She said, we're good.
Okay. Good. Okay. So moving on, Chief, your report time.
An interesting segue. So I think the most significant event for us from a district perspective has been the resignation of Ryan Roberts. And I think that occurred this past Friday. And as pertinent to everything we just discussed, Ryan managed all of our wildland fire billing stuff. And so we have been working at implementing some part-time paramedic coverage to cover open vacation and sick shifts, as well as some of those shifts until we get someone hired to replace him. A lot of the week has been spent on the wildland fire side with some stopgap stuff to transfer user IDs to numerous systems. Our wildland certification system, our wildland fire availability system, and most important probably is our wildland fire billing system. And so Rick Henriksen has taken all of that over interim. And then we'll see, from the applicant pool as we look to replace a shift officer, if they have any of those skill sets. I have not had access to the wildland fire billing system, so I don't know what data is available there. And I know that one of the things the board was desirous of was to understand that turnaround time from when a bill is submitted to where we're reimbursed, and all of that sits unknown. And if Kathy and I and Rick can sort some of that out, we'll try to do that. So we're spending a lot of time kind of reassigning the areas of specialization that he worked in. We've reached out to the members that spend a lot of time on deployment and ask them to make sure that we're aware of how that might affect them. I haven't received any emails regarding that yet. So moving forward, we will look to advertise that position. Concurrently, we're still going to be working on our part-time paramedic staff, and we have a part-time paramedic that's actually coming in tomorrow, which is one of our former shift officers who lives adjacent to our community. And so Connor Moran will be coming back to start working some shifts for us. In addition to picking up the wildland fire billing stuff, Rick Henriksen is working on fire code adoption actively with the town. And that's a somewhat difficult, convoluted process. But the goal is to get our fire codes within town to resemble what occurs outside of town limits regarding ignition resistant construction, sprinkler systems, and various things. And so that way a builder has one set of rules functionally to follow. The confounding piece, I guess, is that we have a third party that does some of the building inspections for the town. And so it's a coordinated effort between our inspector, the building inspector for town, and then obviously town government and review by town trustees. So Rick's actively working on that. Big Springs egress continues to be a thing, and we're actively researching some of the wildwood options. and working with town to study egress feasibility specifically on that and get some grant money spent that they had to determine that feasibility. So I continue to work on that. Town has asked me to participate in a couple of other emergency planning venues, if you will. Specifically, the police chief and I are going to co-share the responsibility of the hazmat visioning team. And so he and I are now added on that list, and we'll start attending those meetings. Similar story for what's called the MAX group, but those are typically municipalities meeting with Office of Emergency Management. These are all, Zoom or Microsoft Teams meetings. And so we're going to be, Larry and I are going to start routinely participating. And I believe that's a once a month, first Monday of the month meeting. So I'm a little more involved representing some of the town needs as regarding emergency planning. And so that's starting to happen. COVID vaccinations, I think, are on track, and those are all occurring. There's about five of us getting those vaccines to either today, tomorrow, or the next day. The new applicant pool, Ian, I know that that's down in, new business or old business. Having the resignation of a shift officer has certainly confounded that a little bit in dividing up the workload. But myself and the other two available shift officers are still working on that. They have been incorporated in some email chains. Three of the new applicants attended training on Saturday. And so we're still trying to flush some of that out. Ian, I will let you address, we'll talk about radios a little later. We'll talk about Lucas a little later, and we'll talk about the request to consider the bunker gear reserve. But I guess I'm going to catch a piece of that now. One of the issues that we have is that we budgeted for 4 to 5 sets of bunker gear in the existing budget. However, we have 8 to 10 applicants, and we don't have bunker gear to distribute to them. And so my request to the board was going to be for us to consider using the amount we allocated towards bunker gear reserve to actually spend that money this year to get enough bunker gear to onboard any of our part-time employees as well as the new applicant pool. I think that's the gist of it for me. Well, I lied. And then just letting the board know that we received $4,500 that was submitted to the state regarding our volunteer pension. So that went to FPPA from the state. We just received that in the past 2 days. And then we also completed the actuarial process questionnaire for volunteer pension. They do that every 2 years. And so we've completed that and sent that to them. And then we'll see another actuarial process by the end of the year.
Hey, Chief Dirk, I have a question on your the January stats. Can you hear me okay, or am I kind of garbled?
Go ahead.
Okay. So we're for each event, it shows a number of responders. Is it possible that we could have maybe another column that would say that for this type of event, we should have, X number of responders so that we can see kind of a comparison of the responders versus what would be ideal?
I understand your request. And there are certainly what are called standards of cover for certain types of events. So we could say that anytime we have a fire alarm, we should respond with a fire engine for 3 personnel. And a standard EMS event should in fact include 2 personnel, but the difficulty is, let's say it's a CPR in progress and we really needed 6. And so I want to make sure that we can, quote, give you, I guess, what you're looking for. Although I will honestly tell you the situations where we have one and two responders is probably the biggest thing I wish to address or tackle. Mm-hmm. Patrick had asked last month for us to show how many people were actually on the call or at the scene versus how many were standby at the station. And I don't see that that got added, but let me have a talk with Jim and we'll see what we can do.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever would be most effective to show, are we able to respond with the number of personnel that we would like to, and what's the deficiency there? You know, maybe it's a case-by-case basis where you're making the judgment call. You know, I don't know, but let's see what you can do, Chief Durr. That'd be appreciated.
Yeah, that's great. You guys want to understand the gap, and so sure, I understand that.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I also asked Jim earlier, because I was looking at this, to add the dispatch time of the call, just to give us a better indication of where we're seeing the gaps. I think we already know, but it's going to be kind of night times are worse. But just to give us an indication so we've got some kind of records.
Sure, that makes sense. You know, it's, Ian, it's absolutely, you think it's nighttime, but it's odd that sometimes Sunday morning, 10 a.m., we'll have a status one call. Mm-hmm. And so I think date and time. So I'll try and get Jim to squeeze that all in.
Yeah. That's the kind of the visibility that I'm trying to get from that. Is exactly that is, you know, is it Sunday at 10 a.m.? Yeah, maybe kind of weird like that. Okay. Are you all done, Chief?
Yes, sir.
Any further board questions for the Chief?
I have none.
Go ahead, Ray.
I'm good.
Oh, sorry, you have none. Okay, I got you. I misheard you. Okay, moving back into the old business. I spoke to Patrick yesterday about the new tender that's still, they're still working on that in the shop. We've had some communications difficulties with fire trucks. They weren't returning phone calls and things like that. So Patrick started to push them fairly hard last week for updates. So they now have the pump in the shop. He did send me an email that should have had pictures attached. I could have shown you, but I didn't get the pictures. But they're still working on the pump. It doesn't look like we're going to see much movement on that for a couple of weeks. So we're still mid-February before that will happen. And Todd, to your earlier question on the 37.5 check that's outstanding for that, that will remain outstanding until we take delivery. So we're kind of sitting on that one. You said that Kathy has she's already got a reserve for that. So,
yeah. Well, she's has a transfer set up to go into the check register to cover it should it go out.
Okay. So that's all I've got on the tender at the moment. Last month, we started to discuss adopting the 16 firefighter initiatives. Or life safety initiatives. I asked you to go and review the material and see if you can Patrick said we should come up with six that the board feel would be good to work on and important to work on. Did everyone get a chance to have a look at that? Anyone?
I looked at it briefly, and I don't know if I really did all my homework there in regards to picking six. I definitely like the first initiative, which is culture. I think that that's a huge aspect that we need to improve in the department. But as far as needing a volunteer, if we're still looking for a board member to work on this, I would go ahead and throw my hat in the ring in that regard.
Okay. I'd appreciate that. I can certainly give you some guidance on that. So Patrick and I had a conversation. He wanted me to bring his six to the board. My six, basically, number one is cultural change. Without that, pretty much everything else is going to fail. We need to take a deep look inside the department and understand what we're accepting and what we're not accepting. For me, number two is accountability. So basically, we all have to be accountable for what we're doing and what those around us are doing. And that reflects back into cultural change a little bit. Cultural change is two parts, the culture and the climate. So the climate basically is pretty much what you're willing to accept. And the culture is the way that you accept that. It's the best way to explain that. Number three was risk management. We need to understand the risks that we're willing to accept. And I think last year showed us that we have a very wide range of risk acceptance within the department. And we need to understand that. And we need to understand when we respond on incidents, how that risk assessment is going to be applied. Number four was grant support, so that we can properly fund ourselves to achieve all the goals that we want to achieve. And number five, empowerment. So ensuring that our firefighters feel they're empowered to speak out if they see something wrong, and they're empowered to make change in this department. And that's part of why I'd like to go out and ask for the membership to be part of this process. This is not really a board driven, or it's not something the board can decide on. This is something that the membership need to have quite a lot of input on, as it really affect them completely. And then the last one's fairly obvious, training and certification. I've made my views on that clear in the past. And just quickly, Patrick's was cultural change, accountability, training and certs, response policies. He wants us to have clearer policies on how we respond to incidents, what equipment we're taking, what the expectation is when we arrive there, and then risk management, and again empowerment. So Patrick and I are fairly well aligned. I would like input from the rest of the board about what you think is important to you and what you would like to see the department do. And Todd, I'll catch up with you and we'll talk about doing a mail out and a communication to the membership to ask them if they want to be involved in this, and then figure out their involvement and how we're going to drive this.
Ian, I think those things are pretty well aligned. I mean, I think if I'm looking at this this chart, the culture, the empowerment of volunteers and employees. And then, of course, risk management. One thing that I'm a little bit surprised that's not on this list, and maybe it's covered under six, medical and physical fitness, is also the aspect of the mental fitness of a firefighter to perform his duty.
Number 13, maybe psychological support is probably the one.
Right. That's probably going to cover that. You're right.
And I think the reality is we could probably get two or three of these done in a year. But I think these would pretty much be the six that we'll take to the sort of steering committee, if you want to call it that. And then they can figure out what the important ones are for them as well. But like I said, I'll catch up with you and we'll start driving that forward and see where that takes us and come back.
Sounds good.
March to the board.
Okay.
And see what we've got then. Last month we spent quite a lot of time talking about expense reimbursements for wild land. Did anybody have any further thoughts on that? Or do we want to just go ahead and draft a policy based on that conversation, which, as I recall, ended that we were aiming to reimburse expenses on wildland deployments as fast as we could, and then continue with the current method of reimbursement for the labor part of the invoice.
Right, I think that was in conjunction with a
policy. There a whole
deployment, right? A policy about how we deploy our volunteers out of our district.
Right. So you got you.
I thought there was a holdback.
Go on.
Sorry, I thought there was a holdback of like 15% or something like that as well.
There is. So we pay. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chief. 85% when the request clears, and then the last 15% once we get the check. So that's just in case
there's
differences between the two things.
I think that piece is accurate. Yeah. Ian, I think that, and all of you. So I think the interesting discussion kind of goes back to Henry's point. And so some of the folks that are going out on deployment, in a way, are functionally, you know, functioning as independent contractors or whatever. And I guess what I don't fully understand is how much of the reimbursed amount is expenses versus their hourly reimbursement. But my understanding was that some of those expense reimbursements were considerable, perhaps 50% of the amount owed them.
I think we got it about 30%.
Okay.
Is when you were away on the call last board meeting.
I guess I don't have a lot of heartburn on 30%. I think when we get to the 50%, and particularly for someone who, you know, if we have multiple firefighters that we're reimbursing expenses, you know, and again, to the tune of $50,000 over the course of a couple months, I don't have vision on that. So I guess I'm just raising that might be an issue, but I do think the intent of getting their expenses paid quickly is in good spirit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's kind of why I raised this last month. This is a wider ranging conversation. Last month it was more about the wildland billing generally, because, you know, we signed checks to the tune of about $34,000. And it was obviously concerning to the board that we're floating quite that much money. And if more people end up going out on deployment, then that number gets bigger. So it's something we've definitely got to keep an eye on and understand.
I mean, should we set a reserve to just be able to cover these expenses? You know, that's another thing we could do. Just so we always have something in our general fund to, you know,
to
have set aside. I mean, that's an idea.
That's a possibility. My question on that would be, what would we do if we exceed that reserve?
Yeah, but I mean, right now we don't. Basically, we're just paying it, and we're not really planning for it, you know. And if we exceed our plan, we should have enough cushion, hopefully. But maybe we should look at last year's numbers and just try to figure out a plan going forward to best to best protect the department against any of this float that we're worried about.
Okay.
Because, I mean, all in all, we get paid back more than what, you know, we're paying out. So it's not really a... Do we have an echo?
Yes.
Okay. Is it just me?
It comes and goes. I'm not sure why.
Okay. Anyway, if we could put together speaking,
they could just mute themselves. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just thinking that, you know, if we can just put a plan together that best protects the district against, you know, the money that we would be floating for wildland deployments. Right. You know, I don't think that anybody's saying we don't want to have firefighters go on wildland deployments, but we certainly do want to be financially responsible, you know, for our taxpayer dollars. So let me look at that with Kathy and see if we can come up with a recommendation. You know, maybe we just set aside a reserve and that gives us some protection. You know, but I don't think that I don't. Yeah, we worry about this float, but ultimately the department comes out on top in the long run. So I don't think it's a bad thing.
But then again, that was an extraordinary year. We've never paid like that in the past.
Hmm. Yeah, and the weather is going to probably have more extraordinary years coming up.
Yeah, I hope not.
Todd, my two cents, I like that idea a lot. You know, the concept was at the end of the year, and I think we were net positive $62,000 with the amount due. And the thought was that, you know, we need to replenish our capital reserves. But functionally, whatever money we made sending trucks out on wildland deployment, it would make sense to use a portion of that, certainly from 2020, towards this reserve concept for, you know, reimbursement. So I like the idea.
Okay. I'll look into that a little further then.
Okay. That sounds good. I'll leave that with you. We'll pick that up unless anybody has any questions. Okay. I'll pick that up next month. I would say if we could sort this out before wildland season begins, but I don't think it ever ends anymore, it seems. okay, last month we talked about paid sick leave for part-time employees. I did a rough calculation of what that actually looks like cost-wise. Comes out to about $3,000 a year based on the statute numbers of 1 hour of sick leave for 30 hour worked for our three part-time employees. We don't have to do this year. I would like us to do it this year. I think it's a good faith move. It's going to require a board resolution to modify the personnel handbook. And I think my question is, the question the board asked last month was how much would it cost? So around about $3,000 for the year. My question to the board is, do you want to go ahead and do this? My recommendation is yes. Any questions, comments, concerns?
Which employees were you talking about?
So this would be Bill, Rick Henriksen, and Cassie.
Oh, okay.
Does Ian, does that still follow the guidelines of FMLA that was recently passed in November?
It's not FMLA, it's the Colorado Paid Family Health.
Right. Okay.
It's the one we voted for in November.
Yes.
It's contained within that bill.
Right.
So yes, this is basically exactly that, and the drafting. I'd recommend the drafting of the policy and the resolution would be that would pretty much would follow the statute.
Right.
for part-time personnel, it would, for full-time personnel, it would change nothing.
Yeah.
They stay the same.
I think if we're following the statute, we're fine. We should, you know, we should be able to approve that.
Yeah. So we have to do it next year in January, from January next year anyway. So I think, like I said, I think it's a good faith move to move forward with this. Unless anybody has any reservations or doesn't wish to. Okay. I'll work on the language for that this month. And then we can, and I'll get a resolution before the board for next month. Okay. I think that does it for old business, unless anybody has anything they want to circle back up on, or anything I forgot. Okay. So move forward to new business. Chief, I think you really covered the new volunteer program status in your roundup, unless you have more to add to that.
Nothing on that.
Okay. Personally, I'd like to see us moving forward, getting the new volunteers onboarded. I appreciate the difficulties that COVID presents us, and obviously the loss of Ryan. Obviously, it's going to create other issues as well now, just time-wise and resource-wise. And I've been talking to the chief fairly frequently about this, and trying to push it forward. And I know that there's been work amongst the shift officers to try and push this forward too. So we'll continue to work on that and then come back, keep reporting back to the board on the status and where we are and what the intention is. So what I'm looking for is, and what I've been talking to the chief about, is getting together a plan of how we intend to onboard new volunteers and train them, and try and get that into a standardized format so that we don't have to keep going through this kind of weird process when people join us of not quite being sure where we are in terms of bringing them on board. It's not fair to them, and it just creates more work for us. So if we can do the work up front and move that forward, that'd be great. We have two grant opportunities approaching, one a lot faster than we anticipated. So there's the AFG grant, which is due, or the paperwork's due end of the month, Chief, is that correct? And EMS was mid-month.
So I got my hands into the EMS one. And so the preliminary, which I don't really understand that, but preliminary is due by Monday evening at 5, I think. And so I'm actively working on that. And even though the technical deadline is the 15th, it looks like you have to do the whole finance packet, narrative packet, et cetera, due by Monday. So I'm pushing hard on that. I'm not sure I'm going to meet it. Okay. And frankly, I haven't been able to look past that to know the AFG due date, but I do think we should go ahead with that conversation of what we're going to ask for.
Okay. So on the state EMS grant, we were looking for the Lucas CPR device, which we put in an AFG grant last year, but failed, or it wasn't awarded to us, rather than failed. The aim is to put that, like I said, into the state grant this year. There is a resolution associated with that that the chief sent over to me earlier, which we would need to vote on if the board wishes to go ahead with that. I did send you all the details on the Lucas device. I personally think it would be a worthwhile use of a grant. When I spoke to Patrick earlier, he was very much in favor of going forward with that as a grant option. And if we don't get it as a grant option, he suggested that the board should really look heavily at funding that somehow. He feels that it's an essential piece of equipment and it's something that we should be carrying. Um, Any board questions on that?
Not at this time.
Okay. In that case, I'm going to make the motion that we adopt resolution 2021-1, which is a resolution supporting a grant application to the Colorado Department of Local Affairs, local state EMS grant, requesting the funding in the amount of a 50% match of $14,920.60 to be used in the purchase of a Lucas chest compression system for the citizens and visitors of the Nederland Fire Protection District. I'll get a second.
I'll second.
Yep.
Ray wins. Henry?
Yep.
And Todd?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So pass that resolution for you, Chief. Do you need that signed to send the grant back in on Monday?
Probably.
Okay. So, all right. I'll get that signed for you. Ray, I put your signature on it because Patrick's out of town. So I'll talk to you about getting you to sign that in the next couple of days. The AFG grant, Chief and I were talking about what we felt was important and what we needed. I think really we came down to radios and upgrading our radio infrastructure. And again, this is another grant that we went for last year in a combined bid with Timberline, a regional grant bid that also didn't get awarded, unfortunately. Chief and I discussed basically four portable radios, Bendix Kings, for wildland deployments, because we currently have four, I believe, Chief. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So we're looking for four more. We found last year that we were light on radios when we were out on deployment. And it makes it kind of difficult because then we're sort of in a position where everybody's having to adapt to what we have programmed in our radios. And this becomes more apparent when you start to work on a fire that goes to like the federal level when the Forest Service gets involved. I had a very interesting conversation with the Forest Service where we were trying to pick a radio channel we could both see on the left-hand fire. So there was part of the grant where the intention was to go for that. And then the other part was to add some more 800 megahertz handsets, portables. And we're kind of pushing forward on the portables really because they're more flexible. And it sounds obvious, but obviously a portable you can use in the vehicle or out of the vehicle. It's much harder to take out a vehicle radio and take that with you. Chief, remind me, I've forgotten, how many did we kind of think we'd apply for on the 800s?
You know, Ian, I don't know that we picked a number. I think the pertinent thing for the board is that as opposed to the state grant AFG, we would be paying 5% of total cost. Ballpark on the Bendix Kings is about 2,000 radio, and ballpark on the 800s is about 6,000. Of note is that Gilpin County is making the migration to 800 megahertz, and we would be looking at dual band radios, but there really is no way getting around where we need the BKs, the Bendix King, for wildland fire stuff, even though the dual band radios are capable of the same channels. There's just no way to clone them. And so we currently have, I think the number is eight of the 800s, and those get distributed among the officers typically, and there's rarely any left for membership. So I'm not sure that we need, you know, a total of 31 for each member because they're incredibly costly, but I would say another 10 is probably pretty useful.
Yeah, I think that seems familiar, the number that we came up with. So that would be based on this quote you provided me today. So 56,000 for the 800s. And then the Bendix are coming in about 2,000. So 8,000, so 64,000 total would be the grant. And then would be 5% of that, so $3,200, give or take. It seems like a good opportunity to try and take that. Any other board comments on that?
I have a question maybe, or a comment on that, and just kind of playing devil's advocate here. You know, these radios, as expensive as they are, and looking at our run sheets, how many people respond to call, you know, very, very seldom do we actually have 8 people show up to a call. And so the sort of in my mind, the question is, we have 8 radios, 800 Hertz radios, you know, why make them available to people who, you know, run on calls? I understand they are at the, you know, they have to shift offices right now. So I mean, I understand why we at times are short of radio, but I also think that most calls were probably fine on these radios. But I certainly can see that in a few cases, there's probably need for more than 8 radios. I'm just,
Henry, part of it is how we're using them. And so some of our shift officers actually have these at home. Right. And the nice thing about the 800 is that even if you live in Gilpin with our repeater patch, you can kind of get a sense of how the call is going, you know, so if it's a structure fire and whether we need additional resources or whatever. And so, like I said, typically these are assigned one per officer and with, you know, 2 or 3 spares. And so the problem becomes that when we have, you know, a big summer like we did with wildland fire deployments, et cetera, the 800 still have their place, multiple calls. And I would tell you that this is probably one of the most easy things for us to justify at the federal level. And it's pretty glaring when it's not uncommon that people walk in and particularly like on a search and rescue call when we're backcountry, we take these and there are rarely enough to go around, at least on those.
Yeah, I'd agree with that on the backcountry thing because obviously Sheriff's Office and Rocky Mountain prefer to be on the 800 side, which means we can miss a lot of the context of what's occurring on the call if we're only on VHF.
Okay, Chief, so if you had 10 additional, just how would you distribute those or how would you plan to use those for the other members? Maybe it's premature to ask that, but do you have an idea?
No, I think it's a valid question. And again, there has to be a bit of accountability on these things. You know, it's a lot of money to to either lose or misplace. And if they're just, you know, today we have a 6-6 bank gang charger. And if you walk in and there's a green radio and there's a call where you could use it, whoever gets to it first gets to take it. I certainly think that there may be the option of us individually assigning these, perhaps based on call response or seniority or however that plays out. But I do think just based on the cost of the resource, we can't just leave them for anybody to grab. At least that's my sense for now.
Gotcha. Thanks.
But Chief, that's going to probably, you know, lead you down the same path again that you potentially you have, you know, 7 or 8 of these radios not on the call, you know, monitoring from offsite, and then people who stream to the station for a call, they may not actually have a radio. But I think the idea of adding more radios to it will, you know, ease that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Henry, it's certainly a challenge, and there has to be a handful that people can just pick up and go with. But I think if we look at our most common responding, you know, highest number of responders, that they might be eligible. Maybe we split that 50-50.
Yep, of course.
Okay.
Hey, could it make sense to have these mounted in the most used trucks? kind of like the old Motorola's we had?
Ray, I think it's so hard. I mean, we know that we use them on a bunch of SAR calls, and to a degree, people are even coming POV. I certainly think, and you know, as we flush this out, we might look at a larger number, but it would make sense to have an 800 mounted in each truck, and that would put us at 20. And so I guess I'd ask for some flexibility from the board. The financial impact to us, even if we double the amount, is pretty limited. But that is one way, is that we at least have one per truck, but you can never count on, you know, which trucks are going.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem with truck mounting them. It's just, you know, the conversation that you and I had, Chief, about should we be looking at truck radios? But I think in terms of the different types of calls that we have to answer, I think the portables is a better option. Go ahead, Ray.
I was going to say the truck mounted chargers are no doubt going to be more expensive than your standard desktop base charger.
Sure, I understand. And again, let me put the numbers together for this thing. It is a good time for us to perhaps, and the mobile radios, the truck mounts, frankly, the price is pretty darn close to a portable. And it may make sense to do a few of these in our most used trucks. And probably we limit that to four or five and make up the difference in portables. But let me work on the numbers first.
Okay. Okay, so in principle, is the board happy for the chief to go ahead and work on basically the AFG grant for radios then?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, chief, if you need us, again, if this is due end of the month and you need us to do a special meeting to push a resolution through, pass a resolution, just let me know.
Okay, understood.
Any more questions on the grant situation?
Okay, the only question I have is the last one was 14K, and we don't really, unless I'm missing it, we don't have that anything in the budget for grants, except for a small. A couple, like $2,000 or something?
We do not. Let me go. Just lost the page. The total amount was $14,000. Our match is 50% of that. So, yes to what you're saying.
Oh, 70.
But it's still 7.5.
Gotcha. Yeah. I misunderstood. I thought the 15% was 14K. So, yeah, we're still kind of in the mud, so that's no big deal. Okay.
Todd, that's a good catch. Hey, so would it be reasonable for us to, for all of you to make a motion to transfer that $7,000 and change from the 2020 carryover unreserved funds into the grant match category?
Yeah, I think that would make sense. You know, we talked about doing an amended budget. Now we're catching some of these details. We might want to just do that.
So, Todd, in this case, it wouldn't go into the general budget. It would just be how we reallocate that unreserved funding from end of year. And I will tell you. In the grant,
Sorry, that echo is killing me. But it'll still show up as an expense in our budget, you know. So if we're gonna go through the trouble of amending a budget, you know, we might as well capture it. But I see what you're saying. Totally, the funds are going to come out of the carryover, but we'll still have to show it as an expense if we pay for it this year. So anyway, we'll figure out how to handle it And I see what you're saying, though. We do have the money. That's the bottom line. We have the money.
So part of what I have to submit on Monday is where the money for the match is coming from.
Okay.
And I can just.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so I can say it's coming out of unreserved carryover, but it would show better intent on the district if we actually had it in a grant reserve.
That makes sense.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Well, based on that, unless anybody else has any further comment, there's no. So I make the motion to transfer $20,000 from our 2020 carryover to the grant match reserve for the purposes of funding the AFG and state EMS grants this year.
I'll second that.
Okay. And Henry?
Yep.
And Todd?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. I agree with you, Chief, that it would make it shows better intent if we're pulling it from if we reserve the funds rather than just saying we're using it from carryover. That makes sense. Any more discussion on that? Okay, so the last two parts of new business. A request from me and a request from the chief / me. The first one, we sort of discussed this last year, and I put it in the budget and it got dropped out. I'd like to ask for this to go back in. So we have the option with part of our new website to add a membership portal to it so that the members have access to basically, we can publish a load of documents in there. We can publish trainings in there. We can have the updated policies manual and any new policies. And we could do communications through the portal. Basically worked out to be $80 a month, so $960 for the year. So basically, I'm coming back to the board and asking that we fund that. I think as part of the 16 firefighter initiatives, it would be really helpful to have that as a centralized point of sharing data. I am not a big fan of sharing stuff through email just because it gets out of hand really quickly. And not everybody has a Dropbox account. Not everybody likes to have a Google account. So this is just a single point of contact for the whole department to store like required information. Any questions for me?
I like the idea, but one of the things that can happen with, you know, and I'm not saying I don't want to go forward with this, but I just want to understand as we do go forward with this, how do we manage it so that it doesn't become, you know, a junky location where you can't find anything? You know what I mean? That's something. That's my only concern.
I do understand what you mean. I think we'd have to. Well, the way around that would be to have one or two people who basically administer it rather than just anybody can post into or drop a document in. I would envision it in that way rather than, so it's more a sharing from the department out than people sharing stuff in. Although, say, like the working party for the 16 firefighter initiatives, they could have their own area that they manage and they can exchange data through there. But that doesn't necessarily affect the main area. That would kind of be the way I would see it working.
Yeah, so then there'd be maybe it'd be password protected and have a couple of people acting as administrators with passwords.
Yeah, it's my understanding that basically you can password protect it, you can role protect it. So we could have an area that was just for the board. So cool. Again, I think that would be useful for, you know, for exchanging the stuff that we exchange for meetings, so we could get it all in there and it's all in one place. So basically, yes, you can do that. It's the answer, and you can make people read only, so that they can't just dump stuff in there.
So this is me stepping forward, supporting, and you know, one of the difficulties that we have faced is where's the current copy of the personnel manual, and having people come in and sign a sheet saying they read the newly implemented SOG, I can tell you that doesn't occur as often as we would like it to. And so for me, administratively, having a centralized repository for policies, procedures, guidelines is great. And then the other vision of this was that for our new applicants, that we try and develop some video-based curriculum so that if they can enter into a member portal and they want to watch the video on how do I work my pager, or how do I work the radio, or how do I orient on the new ambulance? That would be a place we would put this stuff instead of emailing links or a YouTube channel or something like that.
Yeah. Any further questions? Comments, concerns?
Seems like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I think it's worth a try. I think we struggle with sharing documents and information, and it's an easily identifiable problem. So, okay, I'll make the motion that we go ahead and add the Streamline portal, estimated cost of $960 per year. Do I get a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Todd, I'll take you as the second. Henry?
In favor.
And Ray?
In favor.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. The second item was financing of bunker gear. We put $15,000 in the budget for bunker gear and a $5,000 reserve. The chief was requested to use the reserve this year to get the new recruits gear. Functionally, I would back that. I think we need to give our recruits the gear they need to work effectively for us and train for us. I think we need to just be aware that we do have a looming deadline on some of our bunker gear of 3 years out, where we're going to need to replace some. Were we to meet the NFPA recommendation on life of bunker gear. But I think that's something we can circle up on later as well. Like I said, I would recommend that we do take the bunker gear reserve from this year and use that to equip for this year and then look out to the future.
Yeah, I don't see an issue with that.
We had $10,000 for wildland and $15,000 for structure. Is that kind of how the distribution will be, or is Chief going to come back with some other recommendation of, or how is that going to, how are we, what bunker gear are we going to get for that?
I know, Charlie.
And you said 25. Did you say, Ian, that we had $15,000 for bunker gear?
I believe so.
We had $10,000 for wildland PPE and $15,000 for structure PPE. So $25,000 total. I assume that's all different types of, you know, bunker gear for firefighters.
Yeah. So, Todd, go ahead, Jeff.
So Todd, I think the wildland PPE number is probably larger than it needs to be. And I know that Charlie's out in the audience and he can jump in, but roughly I think we're at about 2,500 a set or 27 a set for bunker gear. And so our 15K in initial budget is going to get us, you know, maybe five or six sets. And in reality, that 5,000 out of reserve is only going to buy us two more sets. And that puts us less than 10. And between the potential for part-time employees covering shifts, you know, paramedics, where I might need an additional two set. And, you know, if seven of the applicants pan out, I think we're right there. And so I just wanted that flexibility that if the numbers add up and I have enough people waiting to join, that we would spend that extra 5K in reserve. And I honestly think I'll have to get back to you later in the year regarding the wildland PPE budget number. And if that's over budgeted, okay, there might be a better way to spend it.
Cool. Okay.
And Rick's numbers are you know, they're accurate. It just depends on the line, you know, the value of the bunker gear that we get. So if we decide we get entry level or if we get the bunker gear that we currently have, I mean, that could be a swing of $800 per set.
Okay.
So, Chief, just to go back to what you were saying there, so you're saying that you want to use the reserve that we set up or have flexibility to go between wildland and structure or both? So I understand.
I think today I'm just asking for the 5K in structure PPE reserve, that we're going to look at that for a total of 20,000 towards structure PPE.
Okay.
Where's this 5,000 reserve number at?
It's down below.
It's down in reserves and other expenses.
Down in reserves, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, we're starting to reserve money to replace structure fire gear in the future because we know we have that coming up. So that was the plan. But obviously, we also have short-term needs that we have to address as well. So
right,
it's balancing both of those two things. It's proving to be quite complicated, it turns out.
At least.
Yeah. But as we have the opportunity currently, we have people who are new volunteers that want to join us. I would recommend that we go forward with the, we need gear to train them with, basically. We need them on board. So it's, you know, it's a direction that we need to go in, basically.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just make it. I'll make the quick motion then that we provide direction to the chief that he can go ahead and use the reserve fund for structure fire gear this year, should he need to, and allow him flexibility between the structure, PPE structure and PPE wildland to best equip the department as he sees fit. Does that make sense?
I second.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, guys. So, yeah, Chief, just keep us up to date on the direction you're taking there so we understand how that money's going or being apportioned.
Understood.
Thank you.
I do got a quick question.
Oh.
Did we end up with damaged equipment or equipment that needs replaced after these wildland deployments?
I believe we ended up with some vehicle damage. But as for equipment, I don't think so. I think we've replaced everything from the fire where it got used or damaged. Chief, do you know anything?
I don't have any knowledge.
Okay.
I can add a little to that. I think if anything, we actually ended up ahead of the game, and we had a couple hoses that needed to be replaced, and I think we ended up with more sections of hose than we started with. So we actually do pretty well from the fire cache of some of those wildland fires.
Okay,
good to hear.
Okay, so I have nothing on future business.
Someone's going for a hike.
I haven't seen it yet. Any other business from the board? Okay. The floor back up to go ahead.
I guess I jumped ahead. I just wanted to add one thing with your with the Lucas device.
Yeah.
So absolutely supportive of it. Two things that I wanted to add to it was, I threw it in the chat, but it didn't look like anybody saw it. We recently had a call at Eldora. Patient ended up having cardiac arrest. We had the helicopter crew land, and if we had a Lucas device, the helicopter crew would have been able to transport the patient with that Lucas device with CPR in progress throughout the flight. Without that, they're not able to do that. So yeah. I think that's one huge benefit to it. And on the other side of things, we have, the current, I don't want to say criteria, but people who are having successful resuscitations, they're saying it's roughly 7 responders, and if you look at how many responders that were, are going on our calls, I think that we would gravely benefit to having that Lucas device, especially if, the on duty guy, gal can respond, get that Lucas device on, they can move on to other things. So I think even if we don't get the grant, I think that's something I think the board should look at funding in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's a conversation that I had with Patrick today. He was very much of the opinion that we should look at funding that if we don't get the grant. And I think it's something that we could look at as a cost that comes out of this year. It's something that is useful to us every year. We run a number of CPRs. It varies every year. So it's a device that will have use for a long time. And your point about the, if we do flights, they'll take a patient with the Lucas on, but you can't do CPR in a helicopter. It's even worse than trying to do it in an ambulance. So there's a lot of advantage to the device. So, yes, I agree with you.
How long does it take to apply that device?
10 seconds, I think, if you're good and trained at it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
And the other thing that it provides is adequate, correct CPR. And, they say after 2 minutes, your CPR becomes like 50% effective, So if you're doing CPR for 45 minutes to Boulder Community Hospital, you're not going to be very successful.
Good input, Charlie. Thanks.
So I'm just trying to see if they'll tell us how long it roughly takes, and they don't. Just looking through the brochure. But yeah, I mean, it's the fact that you can do continuous CPR, high quality CPR, and it frees up, 5 responders potentially to be doing other things that need to get done. It's a huge bonus.
What's the initial cost?
14.6. If we were to buy it outright.
How long will it, just roughly estimating, how long will it be before we hear about whether or not we won this grant, because I thought last year we didn't hear about winning grants until towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I think last year was a bit odd. I think COVID got in the way of the whole grant process. Chief, is it June? Or might need to get back to you on that one. He may have disappeared off.
Okay.
I believe the normal process is in June or July.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. Charlie did jump ahead a little bit there. Jim, can you put that under public comment, please? I'll open the floor up if there's any other public comment, if anybody wants to say anything, now's the time. Okay. Again. So I need the board off the top of their head know when the next board meeting is. So I forgot to put it on the agenda.
March the 3rd.
March the 3rd. Okay. Thank you. So we have no other business. There's no special executive sessions or conclusions. Our next meeting is March the 3rd at 7 p.m. We'll again be on Zoom unless things dramatically change. Going to make the motion that we therefore adjourn this meeting for this evening.
So moved.
Todd?
Yep.
And Henry?
Aye.
Okay, so I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 2037. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you to everyone else
who joined us and tuned in. It's always nice to see people looking at what we're doing. Excellent. Okay, thank you guys. I appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
We'll see you all later. Good night.